This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for November 27th, 2008. Today, as promised, we continue our conversation from last week's Radioactive, as this past weekend was the annual demonstration at the gates of the School of the Americas in Georgia, and as Human Rights Day approaches on December 10th, we talked with local photo documentarian Jim Harney about the SOA, human rights, and free trade. The School of the Americas was renamed the Western Hemispheric Institute for Security Cooperation in 2001, amidst an unrelenting public push to close the Fort Benning, Georgia military institution, which has trained numerous Latin American military officers and members. Many who have passed through the school have been connected with the murder of civilians, torture, and massacres in their home countries. In 1996, the Pentagon was required to release training manuals from the school that outlined torture techniques, extortion, execution, and other counterinsurgency techniques meant to combat whoever is termed the enemy by Latin American governments. In the 1980s and 90s, School of the Americas graduates were connected with the assassination of Archbishop Romero in El Salvador and the El Mozete massacre of 900 civilians as they attempted to flee from El Salvador to Honduras. Colombia's army commander, who received U.S. training and assistance, resigned November 4th amidst evidence officers in that army killed civilians to inflate the body count, they claimed as guerrilla casualties. At least 11 of these officers, including two brigadier generals known to be involved, were trained at the School of the Americas. According to reports, most of the officers had been vetted by U.S. officials for human rights abuses and approved to receive assistance in 2008. The U.S. continues to provide training and funding to numerous Colombia Army brigades known for assaults on civilians. This past weekend, thousands of people gathered at the gates of the School of the Americas for an annual protest calling for its closing and underlining the connections between its students and human rights abuses and the prominent role the U.S. has had and continues to have in training and funding repressive regimes. Bangor resident photo documentarian Jim Harney has traveled throughout Latin America over the past decades. He has continued to underline the relationships between poverty and military repression and global economic policy. Jim had hoped to travel to the School of the Americas this past weekend, but because of illness, stayed in Maine. He offered some reflections on the School of the America and other U.S. military training in Latin America. We continue that conversation. Jim Harney.
Meredith, there's an enormous amount of terror going on. And that terror in Latin America is perpetrated by armies that have a very, very close relationship with the United States of America. And the School of the Americas epitomizes that connection. And the School of the Americas is just a small part of the enormous power that the Pentagon has in Latin America. When we think of Latin America, we're always thinking of State Department people who are down there offering advice in terms of what a four-year, eight-year period of time might look like in terms of our relationship with different governments throughout Latin America. But the general input comes via the military. There probably, for every one State Department person in Latin America, we probably have seven or eight military people who are advising and coercing civilian governments to move further and further to the right and to, as is the case under the Bush administration, to move to a counterterrorism, to link the police and the military together. So just having said that, just to put where the real clout regards to U.S. foreign policy comes via the military. Now, the School of the Americas, it's a very painful topic to deal with. because, as you noted in your introduction, that it's linked to training Latin American troops in the exercise of torture in terms of abetting policies that involve counterinsurgency, that involve coup d'etats, that involve toppling civilian governments. And the hard part about it all is, when we talk about the school of the Americas, there's a flip side of that, and that is the people who are at the bottom. The school of the America basically is not a school that abets and allows military people to be proximate to a people in terms of building up an economy, building up agricultural markets, using military vehicles within a particular country to bring agricultural produce from the countryside into the city where poor farmers are able to market their goods. All of this, everything that I've just talked about, is happening in Venezuela at the present moment. That would be prohibitive in regards to other countries. And the School of the Americas stands totally opposed to all of that, because it's basically there to create an environment of U.S. hegemony and power over the region. The School of the Americas is there to assure that there will never be an alternative to capitalism. That's the very raison d'etre, the reason to be of the School of the Americas. And unfortunately, it is there not to promote democracy, not to promote the sovereign dimension that comes with commodities and with goods and so forth, that they belong to a nation, to a people. Quite the contrary. The School of the Americas are in place in order to assure that the major financial giants of the world will always have control over markets and capital, will always have control over the labor of people as to how it will be used or not used.
In last week's program, which is now archived online, Jim Harney spoke about the 1989 murders of six Jesuit priests, the housekeeper where they lived, and her daughter by the Salvadoran army. Just this month, the Association for Human Rights in their native country, Spain, has filed a criminal complaint against former President Cristiani and 14 former members of the armed forces. We pick up our conversation again with Argentina.
What the Argentine army was doing during the dirty war lasted from 1976 up through 1983. And during that period of time, some 30,000 people perished. Many of them pushed off of helicopters in the middle of the ocean. And oftentimes there would be a Catholic priest on the helicopter blessing the person as he was about to be pushed into the ocean. The Catholic Church was very complicit with the murder and with the dirty war that took place in Argentina. So we talked about El Viejito being 21 years old, and it was a deliberate campaign to wipe out future leadership. And it was amazing that Kirchner, who eventually became president of the country, was one of the few survivors of the dirty war. And I try to imagine what would Argentina look like now if those 30,000 people were able to have escaped the torturers or were able to survive that war? I mean, I'm just breathtaking thinking about what kind of a Argentina we would have today, where the most imaginary, the most creative of the peoples were sought after and eventually killed. So there's the dirty war, and Galtieri and Valdea were two military people. The hard part about it all was that during the dirty war, when things were hard for the Argentine people, John Rockefeller said that things looked tremendously well for the market, and the stock market was thriving during those years. So the Argentine people, the dirty war, the opening up of a space where neoliberal economic order would be able to take grip of the people, grip of the government, so that they would be more attuned to investors in New York and in London, Frankfurt, and be so totally disconnected from its own people. All of this was possible because we could count on the School of the Americas. We could count on the collaboration of the great colossus to the north, the U.S., in perpetrating terror. It's a hard memory. It's part of the scenario that Eduardo Galeano talked about regards to the open veins of Latin America, there to be tapped, and there to be tapped to such a point where people would die simply because of the access that we had to the economic veins of Latin America. The School of the Americas, hardly known in the United States of America, but well known in Latin America.
And talking about looking at some current facts about the connections with Colombia and the civilian, the human rights violations being visited on civilians there. Currently, according to SOA Watch, the U.S. trains the 16th and 18th Brigades, has trained the 16th and 18th Brigades in the oil-rich departments, reportedly killing dozens. U.S. supports the 9th Brigade in the coffee-growing departments, killing civilians. U.S. supported the 3rd Brigades. Again, the list goes on. Multiple mobile brigades, many committing these civilian atrocities, and the generals in charge, SOA graduates. You spent time in Colombia as well recently. Can you talk about this is a current events issue right now, that the U.S. is supporting these same sorts of military operations that occurred rather recently in Latin America, but is happening right now in Colombia in particular?
Colombia is crucial for the U.S. and the U.S. Military realized that. Just regionally, it's well placed. Venezuela and Ecuador border Colombia. Its wealth is unheard of wealth. And we're talking about a country that's been at war for almost 50 years. I was just looking at a documentary on Colombia not long ago where a civilian leader back in the 50s, he was a very charismatic man, I can't think of his name. And it looked as though this populist president would change the course from the oligarchs and actually bring a sense of democracy to the country, and he was murdered. And very shortly after that, war broke out. And it all happened within the context of the Cuban Revolution. The U.S. was terrified that it would spread to Colombia. But even more recently, we're looking at Colombia right now in a context of an energy war. It's interesting that most of the wars that are taking place throughout the world are in places where there's oil, where there's gas. For the most part, you can count on war. Venezuela is an exception. You know, Venezuela, the government has taken a pronounced position that oil belongs to the people. That type of a statement is almost impossible to make right now in Colombia, simply because of the conservative government, the links with the oligarchs, the links with the narcotraficantes, the people who deal in drug trafficking and all of that. Oil right now is British Petroleum has huge pipelines in the Cañon in the western part of the country, a 100-mile pipeline that was being hit by the guerrilla in that area, needed to be protected, so Congress came up with $100 million to bring U.S. troops into the area to protect the pipelines. Now, we're not talking about coming in and protecting the people. We're talking about protecting resources. the region that I got a chance to know was in the northeast part of the country, an area very close to Panama. It was in an area where the paramilitaries had their headquarters. It was in an area where the banana company, Chiquita Banana, admitted recently that they were basically trucking in paramilitaries to go around murdering union people. It was something that was taken for granted in Colombia, but never admitted anywhere else. And now it's publicly documented that, yeah, there were links with the paramilitaries who were killing union people. And the union people in the country never had an easy life. They're very courageous. I happened to go to Barranca Bermeja. Barranca Bermeja is right in the shadow of the national controlled oil company, where they had the biggest refinery. And progressive union people were trying to organize there. And there were many deaths, there were many accusations of being communist and so forth, and people had to flee. But in any case, the terror the sense of being free was not the case at all. Some priest in Barakabameha told me this is the closest that they've ever come to experiencing what it would have been like to live in Nazi Germany, where you were living in constant fear as to whether you'd come home alive or not after the end of the day. And so we have the idea of the School of the Americas training elite brigades in Colombia to go out into the countryside and to virtually focus on the civilian population. And there's a strategy behind that. The strategy comes into play when you think of natural resources, like lumber, oil, gas, water, fish, palm trees, oil palm trees that are very, very important right now in a context of energy, because these oil palm trees, very lucrative in terms of money. However, when you plant them, it's an ecological disaster. But in any case, the idea is that they're going out in the countryside and they're pushing people away from the land and forcing people into the cities.
And now there's a lot of talk about the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, and it's become, it seems, more of a debated free trade agreement than many of the others that have been pushed through. Can you talk about some of the issues surrounding that? And then, in a small bit of a tangent from specifically the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, when Barack Obama, during the debate, brought to question the human rights, labor rights climate that is in Colombia in the context of the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, he referenced the Peruvian Free Trade Agreement as a free trade agreement that might be okay, but yet demonstrators protesting the Peruvian Free Trade Agreement were shot and killed. Can you talk about good free trade agreements, bad free trade agreements in the context of some of these ones we're looking at right now?
Free trade agreements, it's an interesting topic all on its own. And the reason all these bilateral agreements with one country, another country, and so forth, that has all been created simply because the free trade area of the Americas ended up being a disaster. You know, so what happens, the U.S. tries to do an end run and try to get...
So to interrupt real quick, just to tell people, the free trade area of the agreements would have included all of the Latin American countries in one trade bloc with the U.S.
Yeah. So what happens here is, we'll have a trade agreement with Colombia. and then the one with Bolivia, and then we've got one with Peru and all of that. And I think, at essence, and I think this is where the School of the Americas is all about, at essence, the free trade agreements with whatever country basically have one perspective in mind, and that is to open up the service sector, the banking sector, the telecommunications, to give more of more breadth to the people who control financial capital, that world where people are constantly making bets on the price of oil and gas and so forth. So the area of that's rich in these trade deals has to do with that area of capitalism that we know as financial capital, the financialization of the global economy. And it's the financialization of the global economy that is what free trade agreements are all about. So the one with Colombia, we're dealing with a space that by no means is democratic, even though, quotes, there are elections. We're always talking about elections in a war-torn country, elections where bloodletting is very, very pronounced. Elections in a country where millions of human beings have been uprooted, and more internal refugees in Colombia than any place in the world, with the exception of Somalia. So I'm trying to think of the idea of having a free trade agreement with Colombia when union people can't stand tall, where union people live in fear. I'm trying to think of a trade agreement with Colombia when farmers unable to hold their ground in terms of prioritizing their own farms, and to be able to have agreements with the government that would allow them to grow crops that would mean that they would be able to sustain their family, that would mean that they would generate an income where communities would be able to tap into the locally created wealth to build schools and have health clinics and guarantee or have a situation where food is a guarantee that of just being human, you know. that those issues aren't being talked about. Oftentimes, we're more interested in belt-tightening measures creating situations where people have to spend less on going out buying their weekly food. The situation is very fragile for most of the Colombian people. But again, a trade agreement in the thick of a 50-year war, I'm trying to imagine who wins when there's that kind of tension going on. How do we really speak about democracy? We had a trade agreement with Peru that was approved. I remember reading in the Financial Times of London about a community, and I don't remember the name of the community right now, but it is the most polluted area, the third most polluted part of the planet, in Peru, in the highlands of Peru. And the reason it's polluted is that there's a smelter there spewing out all kinds of toxicity daily. The company that owns it is based in St. Louis. And now, in that particular community, 90% of the children born who make it to the age of 5 will have high lead levels in their blood, 90% of the children. And I'm trying to imagine that when you have a trade deal recently approved that doesn't speak to addressing the situation of a given community where the children will be contaminated with lead poisoning or lead in their blood, I think is a travesty.
You've been listening to Radioactive. Archives of this and other programs can be heard at weru.org.